Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Well, we're back for another Fireside Chat, and as always, I'm Dan, but I'm not here with Matt this week. I'm here with two other co-hosts. I'm here with Kevin Olenek from the Hockey Podcast and Mike Gold, who is from all over the web. So why don't I let each of my hosts introduce themselves. Kevin, why don't we start with you?
Well, hello. I'm Kevin. I'm the host of the Hockey Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at podcast_hockey. Facebook.com, The Hockey Podcast, YouTube.com, The Hockey Podcast. We recap weekday Flame games Monday to Thursday and then do a regular Monday podcast. We do chat about one of the enemy teams of the Flames as well, which is the Vancouver Canucks, but we'll cover all NHL. That's fine. I'm out in the rainland here anyway. And also I write for the Dub Network, call play-by-play for the Greater Vancouver Canadians, the BCEHL.
So, Kevin, I have to ask, that's kind of a caveat. We do a show after weekday Flames games. Are you just like old men and want to go to bed early on weekends, or what's the deal there?
No, I do play-by-play on weekends for the Greater Vancouver Canadians. And the other group is, everyone else is afraid to host. That's the problem.
Ah, there you go. Okay. And Mike Gold, you've been on the show a few times. You've been with us live at Flames training camp. We've had you on recorded shows a couple times. Why don't you introduce yourself again for those that might not know you?
Yeah, I'm Mike Gould. I've been, I guess, on this show, I don't know how many times now, half dozen times maybe. I've been on Fan 960. You might have heard me there talking with either Ryan Pinder or Pat Steinberg, mostly about the Stockton Heat, which is the team that I was able to cover last season at the Scotiabank Saddledome when they were playing here because of all things that broke loose. And that was a lot of fun. Got to see them in person when not a whole lot of people did, being in the empty Scotiabank Saddledome with probably about 25
people. It's a weird feeling, isn't it?
Playing inside of it. Very weird. I write for flamesnation.ca and a bunch of other places. And I am the public address announcer for the Okotoks Oilers in the Alberta Junior Hockey League. And they have lost, I think, 9 consecutive games that I've been at. So,
You know what that means. You're not going to be the public address announcer very long. This guy's a bad omen.
Yeah, it's not going so well lately. They're scoring a lot of goals. The goaltending's been a little bit suspect, but they'll get back into it.
Sounds like the start the Flames usually have, doesn't it? Losing 9 games in a row coming into November?
No kidding. I mean, well, you look at how many season openers they've lost in a row, right? I mean, it's up to 12 now.
Yeah.
On the streak in North American professional sports.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this week, guys. Let's recap these games we usually do. And I think this week was really the first week that we saw the Flames maybe face some adversity. We saw them start the week off since we talked last in Montreal, or against Montreal. Yeah, in Montreal. And they lost 4-2 in that game. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't think the Flames probably played the best 60 minutes there. Kevin, what were your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, it felt, I guess, and this really started with San Jose too. You look after that Rangers game, that was probably the height of where the Flames were at this year. And then San Jose, they had the letdown, and I felt like Montreal, they also came with a little bit of a hangover. Looked at the Montreal Canadiens, didn't take them too seriously, I didn't think, and they stumbled for sure.
It kind of felt like last year when they lose a game and then they'd go into the next game on the loss and lose again, and they sort of had to break that funk. Mike, what were you thinking about that one?
Yeah, it was sort of a continuation of the third period of the San Jose game, where watching that San Jose game, as soon as they didn't score in the second period, after they'd had like a dozen glorious chances, you knew they were going to give up a weak one in the third. And it just sort of felt the same way, that the puck wasn't really destined to go in for them in that Montreal game. I thought it was, it was sort of close, but Montreal was definitely carrying the balance of the play in that one. And I think that was sort of the first of a couple consecutive full games where the Flames really struggled to generate a whole lot of high danger stuff. And it certainly didn't look like any of their chances really gave Jake Allen much, gave him much to work with, honestly. It was a tough one, but it wasn't the sort of game where, and it was also the start of something that I liked, where they put Monahan up with Mangiapane and Coleman, which I think has, through this sort of stretch of play, has been maybe their most consistent line.
Do you think you'd keep that line? Games.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I kind of disagree, because I feel like Coleman has struggled the last little bit. He's been taking a lot of penalties. I don't know. I feel he's a better fit with Backlund than
like
he is
Sam
with
Bennett
Monahan.
All over again.
Yeah, except older and American. I'd like to see. I mean, we're off track already, and it only took 4 minutes. Congratulations to us. But I'd like to see Dubé with Monahan and Mangiapane, and I'd like to see Coleman back with Backlund and Pitlick. I just don't feel that Monahan and Coleman are on the same page for some reason.
I don't much care who the third guy on that Monahan-Mangiapane line is, as long as they keep Monahan and Mangiapane together. I think it's been a relatively good stylistic fit with those two. And you can see sort of Mangiapane has some of the Gaudreau-ish tendencies, but he is also, I think, a little bit better at retrieving pucks for Monahan to get.
I would agree with that.
And yeah, I mean, I can see the point that you're making about Coleman. They got to get Backlund going. I haven't liked Backlund as much as Monahan, honestly, this season, which is not great because Monahan didn't have the greatest start to the season. And it's hard. You know, looking in the offseason, everybody thought they were going to come in with a Coleman-Backlund-Pitlick line that would be good at both ends of the ice and, you know, would be able to score some goals. And I'm not too worried about Coleman's production. I think it's going to come. Pitlick on the wing, I don't like it. I don't like that.
Where'd you put Pitlick?
So, but... waivers.
I think he's got a spot in this lineup. I just don't know if it's as the number two guy. I mean, he's a capable NHLer. If we look at the guys he's replacing, I'd rather have him than Dominique Simone or Josh Levo. Like he's a capable guy. I'm just not sure he's your number two winger.
He's just so slow. He's so slow. And when he gets the puck, he is the flame who reminds me the most of Blake Como since Blake Como left.
Also a story from waivers. But going the other way.
Yeah, I guess the other thing, I guess, man, maybe we'll delve into this more. It is a mystery to me. They have to find a way to get Andre Mangiapane more ice time in some way. So I do agree with you, Mike, in terms of Monahan and Mangiapane. I would like to see them together. But ultimately, I think the other question going forward is, how do you give Andre Mangiapane more ice time?
I totally agree. And it's hard for me. Because with the way that the Flames' first power play unit is currently constructed, I don't want any of those four forwards coming off of it. And even as much guff as Sean Monahan gets, if you look at his numbers on the power play this year, they're in the top 20 in the league. I mean, you can't take him off of it at this point. But you know, it's hard because the second power play unit, it just doesn't have the same personnel, and it's never going to get the lion's share of the activity with this coach because he's clearly a guy who likes to. You know, favor his first unit.
That's Lucic, Backlund, Mangiapane.
With
Dubé.
That's the law firm. And, yeah,
that's right. We're talking about this on Kevin's show. I said we were trying to figure out the lines. I said the fourth line is just Lucic and company. It's like a law firm. Whoever you want to put with them, Lucic and Associates.
Yeah, I mean, sort of tying things back into the Montreal game, which we were theoretically supposed to be talking about.
We go off track all the time.
I mean, the guy. If I'm making a change to that top power play unit, it's probably on defense, and it's probably to get Oliver Shillington onto it with the way that he's been playing of late. I mean, holy mackerel. What is there to say? and obviously in that Montreal game, you know, gets another point on the Backlund goal to open the scoring. And, you know, it's been awfully impressive to see what he's been able to do.
I didn't say this off the top, and I probably should before we go too far. Matt is not with us. He had a family emergency this week, so that's why I need two guys to fill his shoes. That's why Mike and Kevin are with us. So let's chat about that Toronto game. So the next night, the Flames go to Toronto. I think a lot, I don't know about you guys, but I thought a lot of the same problems that we saw from the Montreal game still in Toronto. Like I thought the Flames played a very similar game on the ice against the Maple Leafs, and they got the point. And in some ways, you can't really complain when you're giving up two to the East and you're getting one. Like, if you're going to lose, you might as well give them up to the East and get one out of it. But I didn't think a great game here. Mike, why don't we start you off with this one?
I mean, you can't complain about how Dan Vladar played.
Nope.
But other than that, you know, it wasn't their greatest game. I think, off the top of my head, the penalties were quite lopsided in that game.
They were. I've got the...
It might have looked a little bit different. Yeah, it was 3-1 for Calgary, so Toronto had 3 power plays. And I think, honestly, if Calgary had had more opportunities there, it might have been a very different game. But, you know, it was just the sort of game where they didn't score in the first period, and I don't think they scored in the second period, and you could just sort of sense the frustration setting in. And obviously they got a hell of a goal from Oliver Shillington again to sort of get them up, but it sort of felt tenuous, that lead, as soon as they got it. It reminded me of the Leafs game they played last year, where they scored late and then they gave up two straight goals to Nylander and lost. That it was the exact same vibes.
And during that Leafs game last year, I never thought we would say a heck of a goal from Oliver Shillington.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I always had hope for Oliver Shillington. Beginning of last season, I wrote an article that was basically the Flames should not trade Oliver Shillington. And at that time, my expectations were, you know, this is a guy who has offensive ability, and the defense is actually, in the NHL, the results have been better than the offense for Oliver. It's just he hasn't really been put in high leverage offensive situations, and maybe they got a top four guy here, maybe, if they, or at the very least a bottom pairing guy, and I don't think anybody expected him to be.
Well, let's come back to Shillington. I want to chat with you guys a little bit more about him later, because there's some more story of him this week. Kevin, any thoughts about the Toronto game?
Yeah, Vladar again. The nice thing about Dan Vladar has been found money for the Flames.
Reminds me of this other guy we brought in. There's a third stringer in San Jose. Is Mika something?
Kipersoff, I think.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Kipper. Yeah, but he at least they got a point. I agree with you. It wasn't like I didn't think they played terrible, but I didn't think they played well. You could see that Oliver Shillington's really. Was really frustrated with his performance. We'll dig into that in a little bit. But it was also one of those games, you know, we look back and I think we've rehashed Jack Eichel enough, but, you know, it's very, I think that was one of the games like, you know, they really truly do not have a natural offensive goal scorer. And they had a late power play in that game. Had they have taken advantage of it, they would have won. But, you know, that I think became a glaring issue to me. And I think this game turned up later this week.
This game reminded me a lot of Flames games of the past couple seasons where everybody seemed to kind of be doing their own thing. The lines weren't working together. There didn't seem to be a lot of cohesion. Every line kind of felt to me like was trying to do its own thing. And that's why they couldn't come together. Do you guys think that's fair in that Toronto game?
Yeah,
like everyone was trying to be the star, and there were no kind of supporting players.
Yeah, they were forcing it a bit. I agree. There's still some of that last year Flame stuff that I think Daryl Sutter is trying to weed out of the team, and that's one of it for sure. There still seems to be a bit of fragility with this team in certain situations.
But it takes a while to beat that out of your team.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, and we're only 16 games into the year, so.
We talked about a great game from Dan Vladar. I think we can all agree the next one probably more impressive. Vladar gets his first NHL shutout and his second straight start, which I don't think anyone expects on this road trip, as the Flames best the Ottawa Senators 4-0. And not only did Vladar get his first shootout, but Walker Duehr played his first NHL game. He was in for Pitlick, who had some sort of an undisclosed lower body injury. And I don't know about you guys, but when I started watching this one, I thought the Flames looked like that Toronto-Montreal team in the first. It wasn't a great first, and they seemed to sort of come alive after the first. Kevin, what did you think of this one?
I'm surprised you did call them the Ottawa Senators, because it felt like it was the Binghamton and Friends Senators. I agree with you. In the first period, they kind of started slow, and then they started to pick up a bit as the game went on. This was the one game we'll dig into this a little bit later, but this was a game, and this was after, Mike, you shared the Valimaki article. This was when Nikita Zadorov,
we'll talk about that later too.
Yeah, showed partly why I think Daryl is putting him in the lineup over Yuso in a lot of ways. He's active. I thought his goal was hilarious. He just shrugs his shoulder. The reality is they won because they're, I think part of, it was the Binghamton Senators, and Vladar was great, no question about it, but we got to just say it, Anton Forsberg was awful in that game. Like, A-W-W-W-F-U-L, awful. Which, I mean, helped.
I've never been a big Anton Forsberg fan. I've never thought he's a fantastic goalie. Mike, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, the Sens game, I mean, it was a game that they had to win, given their little mini stretch of losing, and they got a lot of goals, which they needed, and you know, I thought the Monahan line was, again, pretty good. The top line was better. The Zadorov goal was, again, like you said, Kevin, pretty funny. Yeah, Zadorov, I mean, I still have yet to see a game where he's impressed me. Like I think he's been competent in games. And honestly, I don't think I've seen much more than that from Yusuf Alamaki either.
I think to me, though, Mike, and tell me if you feel differently, I feel Yusuf doesn't have to impress me as much at $750 as Zadorov does at $3.7 million. Like, I think if we're paying Zadorov $750,000, I'd be impressed by him.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I would honestly prefer to see Michael Stone in the lineup most nights, but he was fine in Ottawa. Like, I had no issues with his game in Ottawa. I still question the personnel that this team has at the bottom of its lineup quite a bit. Especially, you know, at forward, I posted a tweet today, I think, that said, you know, the problem with the current Flames lineup is that 33% of its forwards are guys who you probably don't want to have getting more than 8 or 9 minutes a night under any circumstances.
Mike, does it feel to you like this team was maybe waiting for something to drop? Let's be honest. It felt like they were kind of waiting on the Eichel deal to happen in the summer. When they couldn't get it done, they quickly went and signed a bunch of guys. It kind of felt like they were leaving some cap room, or maybe leaving some holes in the lineup to fill either from the AHL or elsewhere. And Matt and I kind of talked about this, and it kind of felt like when something didn't happen, it's, okay, who's available?
It's possible. I mean, I don't know. I never thought Eichel was realistic, to be honest.
Me neither.
But hey, maybe.
And maybe not him, maybe. But you know Trees always in on something. It just felt like there was another shoe to drop that didn't drop.
Yeah, I mean, with how Tree has been operating lately, I can't believe he would operate under the assumption that he would get a deal done. But, I mean, there are still players out there. I mean, there are teams that are going to probably make some trades. Dallas, if they keep playing poorly.
I've been saying when I've been on Kevin's show, I think guys are going to want it out of Chicago pretty soon.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That's the problem, though. I don't really know who I'd want out of Chicago. I mean, maybe Dylan Strome, but, like, I don't really know if he's going to be a huge difference maker. But like a guy like Tyler Seguin out of Dallas, or a guy like, I mean, heck, if the Canucks go nuclear, there's about 6 or 7 guys who I'd want off of that team. You know, I do think that there is not even just a need for top end additional talent, just players who
capable
you can
middle
count
six
on
guys.
To, yeah, guys who can play like 14 minutes and you can be like, you're going to do something good in those 14 minutes, not just guys who you put out there so nothing happens. And I think that's sometimes a little bit the reason why you see the Flames only scoring 2 goals on some nights where they lose 3-2, is because they just don't have enough guys who have that ceiling.
And that's fair. And I wonder how much that too could be. I mean, I think Daryl has, and we saw this from training camp, Mike, you and Kevin might have thoughts on this as well, but we saw Daryl run a different training camp, not as focused on the rookies and stuff. And I wonder if maybe, again, Tree was expecting one of those roles to be taken up by Zari, Peltier, somebody like that. And when they didn't make the team, it's like, okay, now we got to find that veteran guy instead of bringing up the young kid. Because Daryl has always been more of a veteran guy than a rookies guy.
I look back to something that Daryl said at the end of last season that just sits with me, is still sitting with me. And he talked about sort of the sense of entitlement that he saw. My belief has been that the Flames were higher on some of these prospects, the Valimakis, the Dubés, even the Matthew Phillips, I'll throw that name in there, the Glenn Goddins of the world, than Daryl was. And Daryl didn't see what everyone else did, and he ran.
And do you think the team was high on them because they were good players, because they were the best they had? Like, I think sometimes we overvalue. I think as fans, we tend to overvalue our own prospects sometimes because they're our guy or they're our pick, that sort of thing. And I'm wondering if the Flames were kind of doing the same.
I think that's very probable. I think that they were. I mean, I mean, I'm not in the room when Tree is making a trade, obviously, but I'm assuming that he's
not
hearing...
Not anymore, not since the restraining order.
That's true. That's very true. Oh, is this being recorded now, or will this be edited out? But I'm sure the name Yusuf Alamaki and Dylan Dubé came up enough for him to think that they had some prospects there. But certainly from Daryl's perspective, it wasn't what Tree Living saw.
And even when Daryl was the GM here, I mean, he liked to over-ripen guys in the AHL. And I think that might be sort of his philosophy again, is if he's picking who's getting called up, let's over-ripen some of those guys, which, I mean, we'll talk AHL a bit later, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing when you have the depth. But the question is, do we have the depth to do that? Mike, what do you think?
I think Daryl is a capable evaluator of talent. I mean, we saw it early in the season. He was a little slower than I would have been probably to put Oliver Shillington in the top four, but he did it very quickly. And it was something that I was thrilled to see, even though he's the 24-year-old competing against Nikita Zadorov, who has probably, 300 NHL games. And it was just, but it was the clear choice. And he immediately recognized that, and it's been a no-brainer ever since. And I think I trust Daryl's assessment of the prospects the Flames have in their system. But that being said, I don't think the AHL guys not getting big views at training camp has much to do with how they performed. I think it has more to do with Daryl wanting to see the guys who he was expecting to see first.
That makes sense.
Seeing the guys like Brad Richardson first, seeing the guys like Trevor Lewis first, and waiting for them to falter before he goes to that well. And giving those guys who are AHL guys the chance to prove themselves again for him in the AHL before he brings them up. And to their credits, that top line in Stockton has not slowed down. All three guys are point of game. And I think, Daryl has gotten more of a book on what guys like Trevor Lewis and Brad Richardson are in the NHL at this point. And it hasn't hurt the team in terms of its record so much to this point that it's been something that you can look at and say, well, Daryl, maybe you shouldn't have done that. So I understand why he has done it. And at this point, I would expect, I'm not sure how much longer we're going to see all four of Richardson, Lewis, Lucic, and Pitlick in the lineup. Because I think Daryl is probably going to look at it and say, we have having a couple of these guys in the lineup is good for our two-way game.
And just having a couple of guys in the press box is good if we need a body.
Yeah, but we need more scoring,
yeah.
I think, is ultimately what it's going to come down to. And when you have a guy like Adam Brzezicka, who has 9 goals in 11 games for Stockton, at some point something's got to give.
And all those guys, I think, if we waive them, they probably don't get claimed, and maybe it'd be good to have a veteran down in Stockton.
Yeah, that's a young team.
It is
a very, very young team.
You put Richardson down there, you get some leadership.
Yeah, and Byron Fraze is their oldest.
And Daryl's a coach who always seems to want guys to prove themselves. Maybe this is his way of making those guys prove themselves. Look, Glenn, we're not going to give you a spot just because you're the next guy up. I'm going to bring Richardson in, who's a proven NHLer. Change my mind.
Yeah, it's tough to say what the deal is with Glenn Gaudin, but what were you going to say, Dan?
And I think that might be something similar to what we're seeing with Zadorov and Valley of, this is the proven NHLer. Fight your way into lineup.
Mm-hmm. Well, Shillington made them.
Shillington did, yeah.
Like he forced his way into the lineup with the way that he was playing, and there was absolutely no denying the way that he was playing at the start of the season. And once he was in, he has had, maybe 2 glaring mistakes in 13, 14, 15 games this season, and they have been dramatically outweighed mm-hmm. by the value that he's provided in the offensive and, honestly, the defensive zones. So that's what Yusuf Alamaki is going to have to do. And you know what? He's 2 years younger than Oliver Shillington.
Yep.
So I am hardly in a position where I'm saying Yusuf Alamaki's cooked.
It's just too bad he can't be put on waivers, because I think right now you just want him playing. Or, sorry, it's too bad he can't go down without being on waivers.
Yeah, he's sent down without waivers, yeah. Yeah, I honestly don't think that would be a bad idea, because, if they could send him down, because then you could probably bring up a guy like Connor Mackey and get him some looks, too. considering them.
Yeah. Well, and I think even then, I would keep Mackey down there unless you're going to give him the ice time and let him play. But, I mean, then Stone will get in the lineup too.
That's true. You got Michael Stone. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's finish off this week, and then we'll come back to that. Anybody have anything they want to talk about with this Philly game? To me, it was just kind of a game. The Flames took far too many penalties, had some okay penalty killing that I think saved their butts. And
that was one of the best.
Yeah.
That was one of the best games, although he didn't score that Johnny Gaudreau. I've seen Johnny Gaudreau play. He was flying out there. One of the better games I've seen from Lindholm this year. I think he's been a little up and down, to be honest.
My worry, though, if you get a lot of games like that, you're going to burn out those top six. Like, there was so much special teams time.
Yeah, and I think it's that game was the illustration of what we're talking about. A lot of it's tough with these Richardsons and the Lewises and sort of these bottom six guys that you can't rely on them necessarily offensively. And that is a concern I have going forward, is the depth.
And that's been a concern with the Flames for a while, right? Is we got two lines that can score and nobody else.
Yeah.
My issue also with some of those lines is that, you know, even when the Flames have had low event fourth lines in the past few years, they've been able to hold their own defensively a little bit, and recently we're seeing that line getting shelled at both ends of the ice. Yep. And that's something that it just can't stand. You know, you need to be able to pull your weight in at least one zone. So got to be better there.
I have one more concern, actually, now that I think about it here, and I'm looking at
only one. All right, air it for us.
It is, well, Rasmus Anderson, no goals this year. Noah Hanifin, no goals this year. We don't expect anything from Eric Gabranson offensively. That's fine. Chris Tanev, one goal. I would like to see more offense from the defense other than Oliver Shillington. That is,
I think, like Mike said, though, I think those defensemen have been so busy trying to play defense that they haven't had as much time to be the offensive guys we need.
Yeah, that's true. But it's you.
And also, when you're only playing one defenseman on your PP, it's also, I think, hard to get a lot more guys scoring there, too.
Yeah,
but to Kevin's point, both of the defensemen who are currently on the power play don't have any goals.
That's true.
Which is, yeah, like I'm not too worried about Anderson. I think the goals are going to come for Anderson. With Hanifin, I'm less sure. I don't think he should be on the power play, to be honest. I just don't think that's really his game, to be honest. And I think there is, you know, there's offense with Noah Hanifin, but he's not... he's not the guy who's overloading the net with pressure, ever.
No.
And so, you know, Oliver Shillington is far more aggressive from the point, but he's also got a heck of a stride to be able to catch up and, you know, if there's a rush that goes the other way.
Matt always wants to convert Shillington into forward. He's not here to tell us this week. So he's always, for years, he said, let's make Shillington a forward.
Yeah. No, not anymore. But,
No.
At this point,
we need a right winger on that second line. We already said that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, at this point, I think I definitely swap Shillington and Hanifin on the PP. I'm not too worried about the top pairing, though, in terms of the way that it's, you know, play driving at 5-on-5. I think it's been okay. But the goals, you'd like to see them. And Rasmus is going to get goals. He's active at the point. He's going to score.
They'll come.
Yeah, he's...
Noah Hanifin, I'm less sure about.
Yeah, Rasmus has been very good this year. It's finding that odd, like, I mean, Milan Lucic has four goals this year. It's finding goals from other places that when the top guys aren't going, they have somewhere to go.
And I'm not saying this is you, Kevin, but I think a lot of times fans overvalue how many goals defensemen should get. Like, I think Noah Hanifin is not the guy that you're looking at as your offensive driver on the blue line, but I think he does a lot of good things. I think he does a lot of good things there that make him valuable, even if he's not scoring.
No, that's totally... Yeah, that's fair. That's completely fair.
You know, like, if you want him to be scoring goals, put a forward back there. I think defensemen are just that, defensemen, and he's doing a good job of being a defenseman.
Yeah. Noah Hanifin gets five goals this season. I'm happy with him, honestly. I mean, I'd like to see both Anderson and Shillington maybe crack double digits. That'd be pretty cool. I think that'd be a pretty good sign. You know, it was something that we saw in years past when the Flames had Giordano and Hamilton on the defense, and you would see, and even TJ Brody would get up there some years. You know, it's something that we've seen before, and I think it's very possible. But with the rest of them, you know, Zadorov already has two, so that's probably his full season output right there.
All right, Coach, I'm done.
Yeah.
So after this week, the Flames have fallen one spot in the Pacific. They're now third. They have 16 games. They're 8 wins, 3 losses, and 5 overtime losses. I think that's, what, 3 more than the whole season last year for 21 total points. Edmonton has 22 and Anaheim has 23. So I would say probably normalizing more back to their mean now at third place. But let's chat Shillington. I mean, we're talking about him. This is a guy who played, what, 7 games last year all season. Looked like maybe the defensive fodder in a trade or some sort of package. And now, and I said this on Kevin's show last night when I was on the hockey podcast, we were wondering if we'd be okay without Giordano. Well, the man named okay, Oliver Shillington, has come through to save our butts. And I don't know, and I'd be curious to hear your guys' thoughts. I'll ask Mike first. Do you think that Shillington would have had this chance if Giordano didn't leave?
It's hard to say. Probably not. And you know, it might
like,
be
a, is this sort of a happy accident?
Might be a bit of a blessing in disguise, to be sure. But yeah, like, it's been quite a revelation, and it's been something that I had hoped would happen. I still don't understand why he played so little last year. I mean, they played Michael Stone 3 times as many games as Shillington. It just doesn't equate to me. But yeah, no, it's been everything you could hope for. And honestly, I was a little bit surprised that they qualified him as an RFA. Not because I didn't want them to, but just because I thought the organization was finished with him. That's honestly what I thought. I thought they would just cut their losses.
Mike, I kind of thought everyone's got a Shillington. You qualify him, and I expect him to be on waivers and sent down. I thought they probably saw value there, but maybe not at the NHL level.
Yeah, I mean, like, I thought there was a guy there. I thought there was an NHL defenseman there, but I didn't think that they thought that there was one. And I definitely didn't think that Daryl Sutter would be the guy to unlock him, but that was probably foolhardy on my part, considering you look back at LA and the guys that came up underneath him, guys like Alec Martinez, and you look at guy in when he was in Calgary, and you saw Jordan Leopold come up. And so you think about guys who were able to score on defense and maybe didn't have the most sterling defensive games, who were able to find their games under Daryl Sutter. You know, maybe we should have seen this coming, but it's impossible to say that this wasn't a surprise.
Kevin, what do you think? Do you think Oliver Shillington would have had the chance to emerge if Giordano was still in town?
No, he would not have. And this is where I may be have an unpopular opinion. But I think maybe one of the best things to happen to this team, and I want to be careful how I'm saying this, was Gio leaving. And I'm not saying that Gio was a cancer.
I think on the ice, I would agree with you. I think there's a lot Gio does behind the scenes that the team still has some holes
for. Oh, for sure. Yeah, but I think to me, Gio doesn't want to get off the ice. And I think for sure you needed, at the very least, you needed to at least reduce his ice time. And I think you're seeing that with the crack. And you can't play him the minutes that you're playing him right now. It's just, that's not where he is at his game. And the other thing about this is, I think Oliver Shillington wanted to leave. I was thinking that someone would actually throw an offer sheet at him. I was requesting, I thought if I was a team, I would have thrown a little bit of an offer sheet. You didn't have to throw a Jesperi Kotkaniemi offer sheet, but you know.
And if you don't even do, what is it, $1.5 million, it wouldn't even cost you a draft
yeah,
pick.
Yeah, I would have thought the Flames said, okay, thanks, good luck, Oliver. But he's his stick word has improved, his speed has improved, his intelligence has improved. It's been such a revelation how he came.
You'd almost think it's a different guy wearing that jersey. This
like, year. I've tweeted a couple of times, I'm wondering, is this Victor Hedman? Like, is Victor Hedman here with the Flames? We just identified him as Oliver Shillington?
Yeah. My.
Oh, go ahead, Mike.
Okay, all right. I was just going to say, my rankings, if I'm going down the list of which Flames have been the best this season, I go Johnny, Markstrom, Shillington. That's all it takes for me to get there. I mean, it's just been unbelievable. And I think he's been their best defenseman. And he's, the way that he is playing with the puck has been something that I haven't seen a Flames defenseman do in recent memory. Absolutely. Sure. I mean, he's probably their best purely offensive defenseman they've had since Dougie Hamilton was traded. And
that's a fair point.
Something they've missed. Absolutely. I think.
So Mike, let me toss this at you and then I'll toss it at Kevin. Is this Oliver Shillington sort of a new man, or is this flash in the pan Oliver Shillington who regresses back to a mean?
I mean, maybe if he gets hurt or something, but the way that he's playing right now, You know,
like, you don't generally see guys go from number 7 to number 3 or 4 in, you know, less than a season. So it makes me think something's got to give.
The fact, Kay, like, he, like, in the games that he's played in the past, he's played a couple of half seasons. And in those half seasons that he played, the fact that he was able to suppress chances when he was on a pairing with a guy who was maybe not an ideal partner at most of those games, with a guy like Michael Stone. Like, the Flames were not a train wreck defensively with Shillington on the ice in those games. You know, he might have made some plays that looked bad, but looking at the Forest, he was capable of playing NHL caliber defense, and that was the reason that I held out hope on him before this season. And so the fact that he is sort of seeing a progression there, and the offense is just, I think, a factor of him being deployed differently in higher leverage situations and him saying, I'm ready to eat this up. And so we're not seeing Oliver Shillington score on plays that are flukes. I mean, the goal against Philadelphia was lucky, but the goal against Toronto is the sort of goal that four guys on the Flames can score. And he's making plays that are sustainable in my mind, and he is driving play. His underlying numbers are unbelievable. I mean, this isn't something where we're seeing a guy score points and seeing a team score in spite of him being on the ice. He is absolutely driving. So I am skeptical that this is a flash in the pan.
What about you, Kevin?
You look at that draft list. And I mean, he was drafted in 2015, so he's probably at the point where he is coming into his own. I mean, we have expectations now because we see Cale Makar, Miro Heiskanen, Quinn Hughes, Victor Hedman, some of these young defensemen that come in and just Adam Fox kind of blow the doors off as soon as they come in. But the reality is it takes a long time for defensemen to develop in this league. And it's just...
Well, I mean, you were talking about Hanifin earlier, who I don't even think got to his peak yet.
No, exactly. And he was drafted, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, it was 2016 he was drafted. He was drafted after, he's younger than
same
Anderson.
Year.
Yeah.
Hanifin, right. Anderson, Shillington were all the same year, all 2015.
Yeah. Right, Hanifin was fifth there. He was in that, right. So, I mean, I can only think, I have to think that this is an improvement to some. Now, is he going to be a Norris Trophy consistent guy? I don't know, but I certainly do see that there's some real talent. I mean, look at even the Ottawa game, the first goal, like his stick on that play, that the pass that he set up for Monahan to Mangiapane. I mean, that goal doesn't happen if Shillington doesn't just make a complete simple play there. It's just the intelligence and how he's seeing the game now. It tells me that he gets it.
Yeah, people, I think, have unfairly, you know, maybe criticized Shillington's hockey IQ in the past because he's made, you know, gaffes. And I actually think it's actually the opposite. He is making gaffes, or he has made gaffes because maybe his game wasn't there at that point. But, like, his raw skills weren't ready to make the plays that he is seeing. I think he's actually a very smart player who sees the ice very, very well. And now he is at the point in the NHL where he is A, like, physically matured enough, and B, he is being used in the situations where he is able to make the plays that he's been trying to make.
Yeah, I'd agree.
And he is at the point where he's able to be successful the majority of the time with those plays. And so we're not seeing him, you know, cough up pucks that, you know, if they had gone through in past seasons would have led to scoring chances for him. He's actually getting those pucks through, and I think, honestly, it's just a progression. It's a pure progression thing. And if I was working for the Flames, which I don't, thankfully, but if I was doing it, I would really be in conversation with his agent right now.
Well, that was going to be my next question. So, Mike, if you're the GM here, you're the heir apparent to Boston Pizza, you're running this team, you got to pay this guy next year. He's an RFA. What does that contract look like? He's $750 now. You're not getting him for under $1 million.
I take a risk with this contract because I feel like if I hit on the contract, it has a potential to be an absolute banger of a contract.
What would that look like to you? What do you think he gets signed for next year?
6 years. I'd go maybe
6 years at how much?
4 to 5 range. That's what I'd go at.
What about you, Kevin?
I mean, we were asking for the comparable. Maybe the comparable is right on the team. Maybe it's Erasmus. It's 5 at 4.5.
And I was saying this when I was on the hockey podcast, Mike, is I think if he goes to arbitration, it's tough to find a comparable for him.
Yeah, there's not a lot of defensemen who are 24. He'll be, and I think he'll be 25 when this deal ends, who sign 2-year deals, because that walks them straight to UFA. And yeah. So I think the Flames would be foolish to go that short. I mean, where is the upside there? Because, you know, like if he keeps you know going up, then you're just gonna have to pay him more. And I mean, maybe if you're expecting him to regress, but you gotta, at a certain point, you just gotta take these bets. I mean, imagine what the Flames would have done if they had locked up Andrew Mangiapane to a 6 or 7 year deal when his last contract expires, after he'd already scored 17 goals in 50 games, and in the previous season had scored something like 8 goals in his final 25 games. You know, that was a time where if I was a GM, I would have said, okay, let's take a bet. And if it works out, which it would have, we're going to look really smart and have a guy locked in it for all of his good years. That's the other thing here, is if I delay extending Shillington, when I finally go long-term with him in a couple of years, that's when I'm going to have to sign a contract where I'm eating up years that maybe I don't want to have. Whereas if I go long-term now, I get him until he's 30 or 31, and that's probably when I would want to trade him anyway.
Yeah,
Kevin, you mentioned earlier maybe the Flames wouldn't qualify him. Do you think we get a bit of a discount for the loyalty?
Well, here, this is sort of what I'm thinking, just in terms of big picture, why I'm going RAS at this point. I mean, I see your point, but I mean, I think it's easy. Dan and I have had the chat about what we pay Matthew Tkachuk. I mean, that's easy to find that money. It's in Zadorov and Gabranson, you probably are not bringing back. But where the problem here is, what are you paying Johnny next year? And yeah. I mean, it's
and yeah, and that's the only issue. I think where would you find that $5 million on next year's roster?
Like, if you could bridge Oliver Shillington at a 4.5, and you know, there is a legitimate argument that he hasn't proved it yet. His argument would be is that it's a defense market, and he probably has a lot going for him.
But he's also RFA, so I mean, he's not going to be UFA on the open market. Calgary could qualify him. And you'd have to offer sheet him. And again, if you're getting that much of an offer sheet for him, I don't know, he's going to get offer sheeted by another team at 4-5.
Yeah.
I think there's enough other UFAs that I would go after, not want to give up the picks.
Well, here, let me ask two questions here. Let me just throw this in this situation, because I agree with Mike that, I mean, I think I kind of see the high point, but is the fact that he's playing with Chris Tanev a help, or do we think if Oliver Shillington was playing with Rasmus Anderson, we would be seeing the same thing?
I think Tanev's helping him, definitely. But, like, I think, you know, the evidence with... I think Anderson is a guy who is capable of providing a similar amount of value as Tanev when Anderson is at his best, which we haven't always seen. Anderson last season... was not very good, I didn't think, for most of last season.
That's the story of this whole team last year, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, and Anderson's another guy who's maturing, right? And, you know, Tanev's not going anywhere for now. Still got 2 more years. And, you know, it is worth asking. And I would keep those two locked at the hip, like, right... No way I'm breaking up that pairing, probably for... you know, until after the calendar year, like the until 2022 and probably longer than that. You know, I'm not breaking up what's working, but you know, with Oliver, it's hard to say. You know, it really is hard to say. It's something where he has been competent when he's been with lesser defensemen, significantly lesser defensemen than Tanev. So putting him in the middle ground, I think. Yeah, I would just need to see it. But in terms of...
I mean,
of
our highest paid defensemen are Hanifin at 4.9 and Anderson at 4.55 and Tanev at 4.5. I think if you're going to go with this guy, I don't think you can go the same level as Tanev and Anderson. Like, I think, especially on his first really good year, I think you top out of this at, like, 3, 3.5.
It's hard to say. I don't think he takes it. I don't think he takes it.
I don't think he does either.
Here's the thing, though. Like, Anderson and Hanifin both signed those deals way earlier. They signed them when they had to buy up so many. They had to buy up a ton of RFA years before they got to the UFA. And the thing with Tanev is he was far from being a sure bet when he signed that contract. His last couple of years in Vancouver were rough. They weren't what he was doing earlier in his career. And there was a lot of evidence to suggest that maybe Quinn Hughes...
But he also paid UFA premium on Tanev.
That is true, yeah. But there was also a lot of evidence to suggest that Quinn Hughes was the one who was sort of driving a lot more of that pairing than Tanev was. And obviously, Tanev has been a revelation in Calgary. And so, you know, I still think, though, that Shillington is probably going to ask for... you know, I can't see him going lower than four. But what I will say is... In terms of finding the money, Milan Lucic is probably going to be I'm not going to say very easy to trade this offseason, because trades are never easy, but a Milan Lucic trade becomes a lot more feasible after July 1st, 2022.
Do you think you'd have to take back bad salary? Do you think you can move that out for and bring nothing back?
I think it is critical that they potentially move an asset to move Lucic. And I think there are teams that will... very gladly entertain that, especially if you look at teams that are maybe more financially moribund, because Lucic next season counts for 5.25 against the cap, but he makes less than $1 million after his signing bonus is paid out on July 1st, and his no trade clause contracts, and he can be traded to 10 teams without his consent. So I think there's actually a very realistic possibility where the Flames find that money by moving Lucic, especially if, you know, he continues as a guy who is a 20-25 point guy with decent defense, because GMs will always value guys like Milan Lucic.
And GMs, some of them will put a premium on a guy with who has the kind of playoff experience he's got too. And I could even see, if they move the right guy with them, that could even be a deadline move if they needed it
maybe.
To be.
Yeah, honestly, and you look at what Tampa Bay did. But that being said, if you move him at the deadline, you're retaining salary.
You have to give up more to make that happen at the deadline.
And you're retaining salary, because you're trading him to a contender, and contenders don't have the cap space.
Yeah,
and
no.
Honestly, I think Lucic probably has his most value to a cheap team at his full salary, because that gets them five and a quarter closer to the floor without them even having to commit $1 million of real money to him. That's something that we've seen
a lot.
And Arizona is probably...
He goes from playing with one Kachuk to the other off to Ottawa.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do that, but yeah.
No, I think that could be very feasible, and that would free up that money and still give you some left over. I mean, you're not paying...
Which Kachuk?
You're not gonna pay Shillington 5.2, so that, you know, you pay him what he needs, and then you got some money to sign the other guys you need,
I know that, but this does play into the conversation a little bit, and I do have a second question about Oliver, but what are we paying Johnny? Like, we got that blank check that Twitter is saying, okay, here's a blank check, Johnny. What are we hoping, what are we praying?
Next year?
Yeah, what are we paying him?
That's a tough one. What do you think, Mike?
You know that scene in Ferris Bueller where the teacher, or not the teacher, the principal says that Ferris has been absent 9 times? I would go 9 times 7, or maybe even more than 9 times 7. I would go maybe even up to 9.5 times 7, or even maybe even a little bit higher than that. But, you know, I think losing Johnny is it would be the sword through the heart. It would be if I lose Johnny in free agency, I immediately start a rebuild. I don't see the future of a team that's led by Matthew Tkachuk. As much as I like Matthew Tkachuk,
I think especially after letting the last icon in Jerome McGinley go for virtually nothing. I mean, we got, you know, pittance for that. I don't think this team can do that again.
Oh, God. If you lose Johnny for nothing, like if you don't even get any assets for him, ugh, that would
put... If we get Poirier and Klimchuk again?
But if you get nothing, like if he walks in free agency...
Well, I think Tree's smart enough not to let him go for nothing. I mean, if he doesn't think he's going to be able to sign him, I think there could be a deadline move.
Well, he let Mark Giordano go for nothing. And, you know,
But that was a different scenario, right? That was the expansion draft.
But at the same time, I mean, you're looking at the guys who they had available I think there's a very real scenario. Like, there were so many defensemen who were traded leading up to the expansion draft. But that's a completely different discussion. But
what do you think his deal is, Kevin?
Who, Johnny's? It's hard not to go nine. It's hard not to go what Mike said. But the question is do you want two players on your team with $9 million? Because, I mean, look at, there are teams, there's a team in out east at the center of the universe that has four players in that over $10 million range, and it's tough cap-wise, but to me, I think that's what you have to do. But then the next question with Oliver that I have is, and I don't think that this is ridiculous, maybe you do, but we've already talked about, there's talk about Monge on the Olympic team. What if Oliver Shillington is on the Swedish Olympic team?
I delved into this a little bit. I took a look at it completely serendipitously a few days ago, and I would love it. I don't think it's going to happen. I think, like, with Oliver, he plays for the worst possible team to be able to get on their Olympic team, because if he was Finnish, he'd be on it, absolutely. If he was Russian, he'd definitely be on it. Russia does not have many good defensemen. But Sweden, I think he would struggle to be in the top four on their second team, as good as he is, because the guys who they have, I mean, Hedman Karlsson is guaranteed to be their top pairing. They've got Hampus Lindholm. They've got John Klingberg. They've got Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who they're probably going to take, even if he's not that great anymore. They've got Jonas Brodin. They've got probably Rasmus Andersson, who they would take before they took Shillington.
I think Shillington only makes it if there's a big injury.
I think, yeah, Shillington only makes it if there's three big injuries. Like, that's how deep Sweden is as a country. They're outside of Canada and maybe the States, but I'm not even convinced on the States. Sweden has the deepest crop of defensemen. It's going to be so difficult for Shillington to crack that team.
Yeah,
especially
and
on the left side.
And that's the thing that if he somehow makes that Olympic team, that makes his contract negotiation a lot tougher, because he has...
If he makes the Olympic team, his next contract starts with a six,
yeah,
I think.
Well, we've talked about the emergence of one defenseman, and why don't we talk about the other one? Mike, you tweeted this week about Juuso Välimäki and his quote in a... What was this? This was a... Finnish magazine.
Now, admittedly, I found this somewhere else, and then I just took and I just saw the article posted somewhere else by somebody, and I didn't see it on Twitter, so I just posted it there too. So I don't really have an RSS feed that chronicles all the latest Finnish news, but I just sort of stumbled upon it.
So the quote here that you did the scientific thing of going to Google Translate and translating it to English, and I guess the quote here translated to English from Välimäki is, "There have been so many games in recent years due to injuries that now it feels pretty stupid that I'm healthy and wouldn't be able to play, but it is not a given." So he's obviously frustrated that he's not playing in the lineup here. If we're talking about, freeing up money, do you guys think that Juuso Välimäki, if he's not in the lineup, is staying aflame, or do you think that's a piece that we might be trying to move out?
I don't think they're going to be hasty on moving Välimäki. I only think they're going to be moving Välimäki if there's another guy who they really like, who is of similar pedigree, who becomes available, and he is the price to get him. And I don't know who that guy would be, but there are a lot of high prospects in recent years who have had sort of ups and downs in the NHL, guys like Vitali Kravtsov and guys like Barrett Hayton. Guys who have that pedigree of being top 10 picks in the NHL. And Välimäki's shown more in the NHL than both those guys. Välimäki at what he is currently is a capable bottom pairing defenseman. And that's sort of the same story as Shillington almost, although a little bit more reserved in his demeanor on the ice.
And I think we can both, or all three of us, agree that Zadorov Gudbranson is not our bottom two pairing next year. Like,
oh, absolutely,
there's probably going to be room for Juuso to join the lineup. What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, it's tough because I don't feel that Välimäki. I don't feel Valimaki's quite NHL ready. Like but I think that there's a lot of potential. I really wish that he could be in Stockton. I think that that's the best place for him right now. Him being seventh defenseman isn't good for him. And I But I mean, it's not like Zadorov has played well. It's like I'm trying to word this.
But Zadorov's much more of a Daryl Sutter player, quote unquote.
He absolutely fits what Daryl Sutter is looking for, and Valimaki isn't at this point. I would loathe to trade Valimaki at this point unless you're getting a high end top six forward.
I agree.
I would be loathe to do it. Like, I just for the.
And I think if we were slotting, correct me if you guys think differently, but I think at the beginning of the season when we slotted defensemen, we probably had Valimaki in and Gudbranson out. And I think this could be one of those things where, you know what, Valley's just got to outplay Gudbranson.
Yeah, and I'm not convinced that Gudbranson is honestly long for the lineup. I mean, he's been good to start the season, objectively. I think so. You know, I think he has provided the team with value in his own end, which is something that I never thought would happen. But we're already starting to see signs of things coming a little bit down to earth. And Zadorov has experience playing on the right side, and I think there is a possibility that we end up actually seeing a Valimaki-Zadorov pairing at some point, which I wouldn't probably hate. I don't know. I mean, you can't break up either of the top two pairings right now. And
no, and I think that could be good for Valimaki's game. I think if Zadorov can you know, play the body and be the heavy on that, I think it could give Valimaki a lot of freedom.
Mm-hmm. They just got to get Valimaki skating back up, and I don't know if it's having him work with a skating coach, but his mobility has become an issue.
They have a skating coach on staff this year now, don't they?
Yeah, well, I'm sure they do. I'm honestly sure they do, but maybe even like just getting him one-on-one time or something.
What's her name? I know who you're talking about.
I'll look it up while you give us your thoughts, Kevin. Where do you think, how do you think we get Valimaki back in the lineup?
Yeah, it's got to be one of Gudbranson and Zadorov out of the lineup. You're not breaking up the top four. So it's either an injury or the other getting Valimaki in. But I guess the other problem, the other math issue here is Michael Stone. And I just wonder if Michael Stone is ahead of Valimaki. If you're moving Gudbranson out, you put Michael Stone in there, because Sutter was a huge fan of Michael Stone last year.
The only thing about Stone is I think he's one of these guys that is a quintessential 7-8, because he can show us that he can step back in if not playing for a while and still look good. Like, he's not the kind of guy I think you need to keep in the lineup to keep fresh.
No.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Danielle Fujita is the name you're looking for.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't feel like Daryl Sutter and Yusuf Valimaki are on the same page. That's for sure.
And that's the only reason I'm wondering if, while the Flames might not want to trade Valley, do you think Valley's going to want out? Like, do you think he's going to say, I don't want to play for Daryl. Daryl's not using me. I want out of here.
Well, he's already talking to Finnish newspapers about how he's unhappy with.
Well, that's it, and I can't see that sitting well with the Flames, no. Of him saying it's stupid.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, it could be a mistranslation again, but with all of our...
Google made a mistake.
Well, yeah, the translation of that.
Note the date and time.
You guys, if you saw the translation of that, and I would recommend the listeners do that. It was quite humorous. Actually.
Yeah, the full Google Translate of that article has some oddities, I would say. But yeah, like we didn't really see the same grievances filed by Oliver Shillington when he was out of the lineup in past seasons. And I mean, he's been at times slow to sign, and I don't doubt that there have probably been some disagreements between him and various coaches. But we haven't seen something quite so public like we're seeing from
Bellamy. And the last time we did was probably Bennett, who they honored his wish and moved him out.
Yeah, or Michael Frolik. And you know, there are enough guys who are attractive trade targets. I honestly don't think the Flames are going to be as quiet this year. I think they're finally going to finish a deal, which maybe seems like wishful thinking, but I think they're finally going to get somebody to supplement this core in case this is Johnny's last season. Because I think they do think very highly of what they can be at their top end. And I do too. I think they are capable of controlling games on a consistent basis. So I think they're going to get some help. And if they get some help, I don't think they're going to move Matt Coronato. I don't think they're going to move Connor Zary. I don't think they're going to be quick to move Jacob Pelletier.
No.
I think Yusuf Valimaki is going to be the guy they try and move, along with probably a first-round pick, to try and land somebody. And if they're in contention closer to February, I don't think they'll have much issue moving their first for this season, especially because the top end this year isn't supposed to be quite as strong as the top end next year. And there are guys. I think it's something that we could see.
And I think Valimaki can get you a decent return.
Yeah.
Well, there's always that GM that wants a young, you know, defensive prospect with high upside.
Well, yeah. Florida went and got Olajuwon. Maybe they see a project in Valimaki as well. I don't think that they're comparable, but I'm just going to throw that out there.
Olajuwon, man, I don't know. He's only played one AHL game since that trade. Here's the thing though. The issues with Valimaki and Olajuwon are similar, in that their mobility is the big question, and they have both been injured and had lower body injuries that have affected their mobility. Now, I think Valimaki's floor is a lot higher than Olajuwon's floor, which is something that Vancouver was probably not hoping for when they picked him in the top five. But yeah, like, I think Valimaki at this point, at his worst, is a capable NHL defenseman, whereas Olajuwon is not. And so,
you know, it's funny you mentioned the injuries. Like, this one I've been saying for a few years in this show is I think that the injuries to Valley have changed his upside. And I think we're starting to see that coming true this year, that he maybe doesn't have the upside we thought. I think he's a capable, you know, NHLer, but is he the capable maybe top two or three that we thought he'd be?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. It's really hard to say until he gets more playing time.
I'm loath, just into the first round pick, I'm loath to give up a first round pick this year, considering how deep this draft is. Yeah,
but you got to give to get at the same time.
Yeah, but I also, the other hand, Senate, and this is what I was going to say, is I think that some GMs would be very intrigued to get that first round pick in this draft if they can. So it might be an easy appeal.
Yeah.
But
I mean, last year we saw draft picks, you know, going for cheap because everyone knew the draft was kind of a crapshoot. But I think this year, I think you're right, Kevin. There's enough. The Flames will be at an interesting position where I think that pick might go for more than you usually see a pick of that round go, especially with the draft the way it is and having more scouting time this year.
Yeah.
Well, and it depends on which player they're targeting, obviously. Like, I mean, a team I could see them very easily hooking up with on a deal is Montreal. Montreal is not going to make the playoffs this year, and they have a lot of players who...
Montreal seems to overvalue their guys, though.
This is true, but they have guys who I'd be very interested in acquiring, and there are guys who you could get from Montreal who you might be able to give up Valimaki and not much else to get. Maybe a guy like who's really experiencing a resurgence lately is Jonathan Drouin, or a guy like... I mean, it's hard to say. A lot of Montreal's guys are locked up on contracts that are not very appealing, but a guy like Tyler Toffoli, who Daryl had in L.A., is a guy who maybe you don't... It's hard to say, though, right? Cause like,
and there's been rumors of him coming to Calgary before Daryl, too.
It's true. Now, is Valimaki too much to give up for a guy like Toffoli? That's the question, right? Because like, Toffoli is... I mean, he has 2 years left after this one on his deal.
I guess depends how you look at Valimaki, though. I mean, if we look at him right now, you're giving up a seventh defenseman for, you know, let's say a top six. I think if you look at where they both are in the lineup, that's a hell of a deal for Calgary.
Well, and the thing is, it gives you the ability to ice a top nine that I feel personally has zero guys who are likely to be liabilities on any given night. Like, you have a third line where you're able to maybe put Backlund, Coleman, Dubé on it, and you have, or you know, maybe you have a Tkachuk, Monahan, Mangiapane, Gaudreau, Lindholm, Toffoli. I mean, there are so many goals. I mean, that is something where the Flames are so in need of finishing talent that getting a guy like Toffoli, who scored 28 goals in the shortened season last year, I mean, that's just something that, you know, that I think that would have a lot of value for them.
And Kevin, I agree with you about giving up the first round pick, but I also think that if you look at a lot of top teams, most of them do put that pick in play. And I think if Calgary thinks they can make it work, I'm okay with putting that pick in play as long as it's going to get us past round one. If we give it up and we're one and done again, then it looks like a big failure.
True. If there was one Canadian I would be interested in on that forward group, it would be Joel Armia. He's 3.4, so less than Toffoli, a little longer, but a year younger. I think he can. I don't know if he's a pure goal scorer, but I think,
and I don't know that we need another pure goal scorer. I think we need a guy with a bit of a, you know, something more to his game.
The other name I was just going to toss out there, and I'm just thinking at this from a Vancouver perspective. So just hear me out here. I don't know if this would work, but what about Brock Besser?
Bingo. I don't think. I just think that the cost of acquisition on Besser is going to be way too high.
I'm not sure if I agree. I'm not sure if I agree. If you can,
I think there's going to be a number of suitors that sort of like the Eichel deal might push the price too high.
If you can get Brock Besser, and if you can send out a guy of equal or similar salary, because what does Besser make right now? He makes five.
Besser deal look like to you? What do you give up to get Besser?
I give up a first for Besser.
You want just a first?
You know what I do? I do Lucic, Valimaki first, second.
Wow.
I don't think they would. Well, I mean, it's if Benning's still there, you might be able to offer a horse, a cow, a couple of trucks, and a first for Besser. Yeah. But he is an RFA. That's the
scout. And the other Granlund.
And the other yes, and Michael Stone. But he is an
the other Stone.
He is an RFA. And from the Canucks' perspective, you got to give Höglander. You're in the situation where you got to give Höglander some more ice time. You've got a couple of other kids that you're coming up. They are definitely going to need to build through that draft again. I don't know. I think that
the nice thing about Besser is he's a right shot, which we desperately need.
That's what's appealing about that idea. Now I know that I don't know if the Flames and Canucks would trade, but that's an interesting.
Flames and Canucks have traded enough times.
The other guy I wanted to toss out there that just may be interesting, what about Clayton Keller in Arizona?
Now we're getting into an area where I know more, because I read about the Coyotes over at Five for Howling, and I think the Coyotes would absolutely part with Clayton Keller in the right deal.
And, that could be, I mean, if that's a team that needs to take on some cap floor, that could be where you move Lucic out.
It's possible. Yeah, Keller is a very appealing player to me. I'd also look at Nick Schmaltz at center.
Yeah,
the guy who, I would be first on my board is Jacob Chychrun. And I know they have balked at the possibility of moving Chychrun before. But if you're moving out Valimaki in a deal and you're getting a defenseman back, and if you can have a left hand, or even, honestly, it'd be Valimaki, but... Like Chychrun is the guy who has the goal scoring ability from the point that the Flames.
So where do you put Chychrun then?
Yeah,
do you move someone out of your top four?
Yeah, I would do that. That's something where I think that would be a precursor to a move where I move Noah Hanifin for a scoring winger.
So you bring him in to replace Hanifin, then you move Hanifin.
You don't move
out.
Hanifin in the same deal because Arizona has no interest in Noah Hanifin. But that's something where if I'm trading with Arizona,
so you bring Chychrun in to allow you to move Hanifin.
That's something I would do in the off season probably. I don't know. It's hard to say, but that's something where if Arizona, because Arizona honestly their window is probably not going to be for a little while, and Chychrun's probably
you guys tell
be
me you don't
old.
Want Phil Kessel.
Phil, if the Flames are going to trade for an aging winger, I would rather them get Dustin Brown than Phil Kessel.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, he's won a cup, but I don't think he's got.
Well, to me, we've got that guy. That guy on our team is Lucic.
Yeah.
Compared to Kessel? I mean,
yeah,
Lucic has Kessel beat when it comes to shooting five hole. I would say, yeah, Kessel is probably cooked or close to it at this point. Maybe if they were signing him for cheap, then I'd be for it. But he's still got 1 year left on his deal, and it's going to
You don't want to inherit that deal.
And it's. I don't think Calgary's the right destination for him, to be honest. I think needs a team that maybe isn't as fast. Because if Kessel's going to score in Calgary, if they get Kessel, they're probably going to want to put him on a line with Johnny or Mangiapane, and he just doesn't have the speed. Like it would be like watching somebody running behind a car. But yeah,
the one other.
So Kevin, you mentioned the
ahead. Just one other team. I'm just going to put something out there. In 2022, 2023, the only defenseman that the Buffalo Sabres have signed is Rasmus Dahlin. Mm-hmm. Dude, they have a couple of players. I mean, I know like you're not getting Dylan Cousins out of there, I don't think. But I wonder what they would be interested in. I wonder what you would take to get Tage Thompson out of there.
I don't think it would take Valimaki to get Tage Thompson. I think it would take less. Because Thompson is having a good start. But there was probably a time last year where Buffalo tried to move Thompson and couldn't because he had a really rough season. And he had a rough season the year before that, too. I think, honestly, at this point, Thompson needs to stay in Buffalo because I think it's the only way. He's finally in a groove. If I was Tage Thompson, I wouldn't want to move right now.
And no, and he's also playing first-line minutes there, which he's not going to get if he goes somewhere else.
No, that's
fair. I'm a little skeptical of Tage Thompson. The guy that I think he's a good player. But the guy who I'm looking at if I'm trading with Buffalo is Victor Olofsson. Because, that's a guy who's 26, pending RFA arbitration rights. That's a guy who I think is tailor-made to sign a one-year deal and just go straight to UFA if he doesn't get traded. Because Olofsson does not line up with whatever Buffalo's window is going to be at all. Similar situation to Besser, if you ask me, in terms of, where they are on teams that probably aren't going anywhere fast, pending RFAs, scoring wingers. That's sort of the same hamburger right there.
The other team that we mentioned earlier that I think it probably is a young defenseman is the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, I could see it.
I could actually see Valimaki fitting in very well there, maybe with Esa Lindell, Miro Heiskanen. Like, I could see him kind of fitting that sort of there. I think Klingberg is over his head there on the first pairing, and I could see them wanting to move some guys around. But what do you want out of Dallas in return?
Number 91, I want Tyler Seguin. That is my target. I mean, I don't know how many years Seguin has left on his deal, but if there is somebody who you can get from Dallas who has the ability... Oh my God, never mind. I don't want Tyler Seguin. He's
I was going to say, are you sure? It's like...
my goodness.
Yeah.
What are they... never mind. I don't want to say...
Sagan's got 9.85
for six
more years.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know that. I don't want Sagan.
If you bring in Sagan, you have to say goodbye to one of the other contracts we want to sign.
I don't want Sagan anymore. Depends on what Dallas... Just one second. It just depends on what Dallas thinks they are. If Dallas thinks that Rick Bowness can get this team back to the Stanley Cup final immediately, then they're not going to trade a guy like Roope Hintz, and they're not going to trade a guy like Denny Gurianov. But if they think they're close to being done, those two guys are the guys that I want.
I wouldn't mind. I mean, I don't know what it would take, and if it's too much, I would say no. But I don't think it would hurt to have Joe Pavelski in this lineup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would.
He
love
is a
Joe
UFA.
Pavelski.
It would be a rental. It would be a pure rental. I don't think you're signing him next year. But
yeah, Pavelski, absolutely. I agree
or,
with that.
Or the Russian god Alexander Radulov.
Yeah, I mean, I think Pavelski makes more sense.
Don't think that necessarily becomes your Valimaki move, but no. I think you could get Pavelski near the mid-season, near the deadline for not much.
Pavelski for second and, I don't know, some. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially when you consider that maybe Pavelski's a guy who could theoretically slot in on the wing if things go poorly. I mean, if the Flames just aren't ready to move one of their centers out of the middle at that point in time. I mean, and Pavelski, high volume shooter. So that's something that I think the Flames would really covet, definitely.
I agree. And I mentioned this earlier, and I think the price will be high, but I can see guys starting to want it out of Chicago, and the only guy that I might want from there is Dominik Kubalik, but I think that the price is going to be high to get him. I mean, they're not moving Kirby Doc. I think Kane and Taves, there'd be a bidding war for middling teams who want a name. I can see a team like Seattle want to bring in a name there. They're not moving Strom. You don't want Gaudet.
I think
Brinkett's not going anywhere.
I think they very easily could move Strom because Strom has fallen out of favor.
Strom's a piece I can move for sure.
Yeah, I think Strom is possible, but I'm a little skeptical of Strom. Kubalik is
I think if you move for Strom, you move for him as a depth piece. You're not bringing Strom in as a top six.
I'm not sure. I mean, when Strom has been with Kane in full seasons, it's been positive. There have been a lot of points.
I guess the way I look at it, though, is who do you take out of our top six to put Strom in?
good point, right?
Yeah, I do agree with you there.
Right, like he could be a top six, but who is he? Is he better? He's a center. Is he better than Monahan? Is he better than Backlund? Is he better than Lindholm?
Yeah, I would be just thinking about this. I know Chicago is going to be on a selling spree, but I would avoid it if all I can, because I think the name that's going to get out is Jonathan Toews. I think that that's the guy that they're going to end up having to move, and I just think that that is a PR disaster waiting to happen.
I can see Fleury getting out of there and maybe going to Edmonton.
I wonder if it's Fleury and they take a shot at Jonathan Toews, if the Oilers do.
And I just don't know what the Oilers have to give you back for those two pieces.
It would be funny if they traded Evan Bouchard. I don't want any part of Jonathan Toews in Calgary.
No, I don't. I don't either.
Edmonton, they got pieces, I guess. Tyler Benson, and Philip Broberg. It would be funny if Edmonton gave up Evan Bouchard, but... I don't think Toews and Kane make any sense for Calgary on the ice or off the ice. I think Dylan Strome has maybe some intrigue if they put him on the wing, maybe, or like maybe he could hit it off with Mangiapane. It's hard to say. I don't love any of Chicago's pieces, to be honest.
Me neither.
No, that's going to be a team that's going to be in the ditch for a long time.
They need to start over. Yeah. They need to ditch everything, get everybody out of there, get a new logo, get a new...
I'm the guy that said that, Mike. I've said this, I think, on Kevin's podcast and on ours. You're seeing all these teams with Native American imagery rebranding. Now is the time for Chicago to rebrand.
They need to do what the Portland Winterhawks did. And just
stole the words right out of my mouth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Portland's new logo is fantastic.
Absolutely. They just need to become the Chicago Hockey Club.
Yeah. Honestly, I kind of like that name for Washington. It's kind of unique.
Too. But, I think that this is the time to shed the Blackhawks name, logo, colors, and go something brand new and say, Chicago Blackhawks are behind us. We're now the Chicago whatevers.
Chicago cookies.
The Chicago hot dogs.
Yeah. The Chicago isotopes. There you go. Ice spelled ICE.
Well, I think the old Kootenai Ice logo they could probably buy for cheap.
Probably. It
would be Chicago Ice.
Yeah. Yeah, no. There's a lot of different possibilities, but for now on the ice, And Seth Jones's contract hasn't even started yet.
Bad. Can you imagine if Columbus gets the first pick and it's Shane Wright? That turns out to be one of the worst trades in history.
Well, I think is that pick not lottery? I think there might be a lottery protection on
it's
that.
It's lottery
pick.
Protected, I think.
I think
yeah.
it's top it? Two, though. I think it's top two. If they get like an Elias Pettersson talent out of that pick, it's already horrible. That
it's a horrible
already
trade.
Just despicable, for Chicago. But, even like losing Adam Boqvist to begin with, but yeah.
So last current events question I want to ask you guys are current Flames is something that Kevin brought up earlier, and that's getting number 88 going. We've seen him play all over the lineup. This is a guy who's on Canada's long list for the Olympics and feels like he should be playing higher in the lineup than he is. Kevin, you mentioned this earlier. What do you do to get Mangiapane going and get him more ice time?
I mean, I think it would be ideal if we can get him on the number one power play, but Mike is right. Sean, like the way the number one power play is working, you don't want to switch anything out at this point. You have him penalty kill already.
And you don't want to change the top line 5-on-5 either. You don't want to break up that Johnny Lindholm Tkachuk line, I don't think, at this point.
I'm not sure if I agree right now. I think that line has gotten a little bit tepid. It's a line that is a very easy fallback line. But it's at the point where I would almost look at maybe trying to get Tkachuk to drive his own line. Because I think there's a bit of I worry sometimes that Tkachuk kind of becomes a passenger when he's on a line with two players who are better than him or equal to him. And I think the best Tkachuk might be the Tkachuk that we've seen who leads the charge on a line. And I'm almost wondering...
So what do you think in top line then is Johnny Lindholm and
hear me out. I think I go Johnny Lindholm and Blake Coleman on the top line. And because Coleman, I think, don't Coleman and Lindholm kill penalties together? I think they do. And Coleman's a guy who's played on a first line before in New Jersey, and he has some score. I mean, he's going to start scoring. He's the play driving has been really good. The goals are going to come. I'm not worried about that. And I think that's the guy who I'd look at. And then the second line.
And then your second line is Tkachuk, Monahan, Mangiapane?
Yeah, that's what I do. And, you know, any line with Matthew Tkachuk on it is going to get a lot of 5-on-5 minutes. And I don't want to break up Monahan and Mangiapane at this point.
I agree.
I think they're playing pretty well together. And so that's the change that I make is I.
And I can see that. I think Tkachuk's also good at drawing a lot of heat towards himself, and I think he could give Sean and Andrew a lot more time and space because he can take, you know, a lot of that heat in the offensive zone.
Yeah, and if that fails, just one sec, Kevin. One, if that fails, that the change that I then make is I switch Coleman and Mangiapane. Then that's when if Monahan and Mangiapane don't stop clicking, the change that I make is Mangiapane top line with Gaudreau.
What do you think, Kevin?
I don't mind it. I mean, they started the training camp. It was Lindholm, Gaudreau, and Coleman. So I do think that there's an interest in there. I think Monahan, Tkachuk, and Mangiapane would be a good line. I don't mind that. I was thinking that you switch Dubé and Coleman, but still it still comes down to usage, though, because you're still, it seems like I mean, I'll have to, just looking at the ice time here, they're still using, this is also an issue of deploy, where it's more 5-on-5, like special teams-wise. I mean, you're not putting Mangiapane more, I mean, there's maybe a legitimate argument, maybe a switch is, you switch Mangiapane and Tkachuk and put Tkachuk on PP2 and put Mangiapane on PP1. I mean, the argument, he has 10 goals. He's leading the team in goals. Yeah. How is he not on the Flyers' number one power play? Yeah.
It's a very good argument. And I you look, because Mangiapane and Tkachuk play similar roles on the power play units. And that is something that I think does, to an extent, make quite a bit of sense.
I like your idea, Mike, of putting Tkachuk A on his own line and I think B back on the left side. I think he's been more effective on the left side than the right, and I can see him driving that line very easily on line two.
Yeah, and there are changes that you can make after that. To start, I would go Tkachuk, Monahan, Mangiapane. If it comes down to it, maybe we see Tkachuk, Backlund, Mangiapane come back, and that's been a line that's been good in the past. But I think it is a good idea to have Tkachuk driving his own line. And you can still have that line with Gaudreau and Lindholm and Tkachuk go out in critical moments and try and wreak havoc and get all offense moving. Yeah. But for regular, you know, second period action, I think that is what I would do.
I think that feels more balanced, too. And I look at the top six now. If we look at the third line as Dubé, Backlund, Lewis, it just feels like there's more balance if we move Tkachuk to that second line.
I take Lewis off the third line, too, and I put Lucic there instead.
Who do you put there?
I put Lucic there instead. But that's just the one change I make.
So then your fourth line's what? Lewis, Richardson, Pitlick?
Fourth line stinks. I mean, it's just not good.
Else is healthy?
That's the problem, right? Like, that fourth line, I mean, Lucic is the best player on that line, which is not what you want. I mean, I don't mind Milan Lucic, but he shouldn't be driving a line. That's where they're missing Derek Ryan. That's where I look at the Stockton Heat and say Adam Rzeczka with 9 goals in 11 games. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who I want to see if Lucic can teach him how to hit, and see if Lucic can give him passes that he can put into the net. Because that would be a big difference. And, you know, because right now, at best, you are hoping that the fourth line treads water. And there is, we have seen Flames teams in the past that have been really good where the fourth line has been a driver when it had Ryan and Mangiapane and Garnet Hathaway. And I don't see any reason why, if they bring up the right players, we might be able to see that with the fourth line this year.
I agree, and I think Lucic has value there to help, you know, like you were saying, teach those young guys.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kevin.
I want to see them give a little bit of a longer look to Walker Dewar. He did have a good enough training camp that they kept him here. I mean, I guess some have argued he's a project, but he's up here. Why not give him a look in the next couple of games? Like, yeah, what is the loss? What is the loss here? I mean,
who are you taking out to put him in? Nobody of consequence.
Yeah, Trevor Lewis, Tyler Pitlick. I haven't been enamored with Tyler Pitlick at all this year. Trevor Lewis
he's been
is
awful.
Yeah, Trevor Lewis has been better than Pitlick, I would argue, but it's.
I think Pitlick maybe looked better when he was on that Backlund Coleman line. I think it was a bit more of a sum of its parts, but I don't think he's looked great by himself.
No. Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Walker Dewar. It's so funny with Walker Dewar. Entering this season, I had him as the Flames' second worst prospect, and it's just funny how things can immediately turn on their head. In my off-season rankings, they had 40 guys who qualified under my rankings, and I had him 39th. And I watched him in his first five AHL games with the Heat, and he was lost. It wasn't there. And it was just
Mike, a lot of us thought the same when Luke Phillips signed out of Canadian universities that he just was a project and a long-term guy.
Yeah. And I like Philp, honestly, probably a little bit more than Walker Dewar. But Walker Dewar has attributes that make him undeniably appealing in the NHL level. And honestly, but at the same time, with Walker Dewar, he's here beyond this season. There are guys in the American League who are unlikely to be here or who could make their case to stay here beyond this year because they're pending UFAs, guys who have been prospects in the past. Guys like Glenn Gaudin is going to be a UFA at the end of this season, a Group 6 UFA, because he just hasn't played enough NHL games at this point, and he's turning 25. And so he might be gone at the end of the season, and the Flames might be letting a guy, you know, just walk out sight unseen if they don't give him a little bit more time. Now, I don't love Glenn Gaudin. Never really been that convinced in Glenn Gaudin's potential when I've been watching.
But is Glenn Gaudin a serviceable enough number four?
But he might be, and I'm not convinced that the Flames currently have one of those. Another guy is Luke Phillip. Luke Phillip is going to be a Group 6 UFA. And then another guy is Justin Kirkland, who I am even less enamored on than Gaudin, but he's another guy who's going to be a Group 6 UFA, and he's a guy who they had up at the end of training camp. So they have options.
I think you also have to figure out what you're going to do with Matthew Phillips before too long here.
That is true.
As well.
Yeah, Phillips is a little bit younger, so he has a little bit longer pathway, I think. That's definitely something. I wouldn't bring him up just yet, but if...
No. I agree with you, Mike. I think, you know, Walker Dewar, we know he's here. We can always come back to him, but we got to figure out what we have in some of these guys and if we keep him around or get rid of them. And I think, you know, those guys like Gaudin, I mean, he's 24. We got to figure out, do we keep him? Do we get rid of him? Like you said, Kirkland's 25. Is he a keeper? Is he an AHL tweener?
Or is he
someone we say goodbye to?
That's the thing, right? Because Dewar and Phillips are guaranteed to be here. Like, they're RFAs or they are under contract. They're going to be here because they're going to get qualified. Gaudin can leave. If he doesn't want to come back, he's gone. If the Flames don't show interest enough because they haven't seen him enough, they don't have the power to just qualify him and keep him. He's gone. So I think it's time that they start looking at these guys if they're really interested in them or not.
Well, here's the thing.
And I think part of that, too, is I think as Flames fans, a lot of people expect these guys are going to come up and crack the top nine. Somebody's got to be a fourth-line guy, and there's a living to be made being a fourth-line center in the NHL, and I think that might be Gaudin's upside.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing, too, with this. I'm just looking at the Flames schedule. You've got Buffalo tomorrow. You got Buffalo Thursday. Islanders Saturday, Boston, Chicago, and then Winnipeg, and then Pittsburgh, and then you're off to California and Vegas. This would be the time that you've got points in your pocket. You're not intensely into the playoff race yet. This is the time that you can do a little bit of experimentation and it's not going to hurt you.
And also coming the start of December, we happen to be in California, so it's nice and close if you want to bring a guy out to give him a shot.
Yeah. I mean,
I think.
And I think we're seeing, like with Walker Dewar, I think that we're seeing just because of COVID protocols, when they go on these long road trips, they're going to bring an extra body. Like just to have that body around, because it's going to take some time to move guys back and forth and there could be restrictions. So I think you might see that guy like Ruzicka get the next road trip or something like that, just to have that body with them.
Do you throw a Jacob Pelche out?
Yeah.
I wouldn't yet.
That's the thing that's going to keep Phillips from getting recalled, is that they have a guy who is of a similar profile, who is of higher pedigree, who will get the call first if that's the player that they are looking for. And so that's going to be the tough thing. But with Pelche, he is a guy who I think we're going to see at this season. I think he's definitely a guy who is going to get a look very soon.
Well, guys, and then that kind of wraps up the week that is for the Flames, unless there's anything that anyone else wants to talk about.
Just a couple, maybe one thing I'm just going to put out there at a couple quick questions. Maybe for a future conversation. Vladar at some point may also need to get paid. And I'm just going to throw another scenario out there. I know the Flames were loath that Kevin Weeks put out Matthew Tkachuk's name in trade rumors in the Eichel deal. Just thinking about where Mangiapane is and what we got to do with Johnny Gaudreau, I wonder if the right offer came, would they consider trading Matthew?
I think absolutely they would. Just depends on what that offer is.
Yeah. Well, this is what I say to Matt all the time. Matt says if the right offer comes, and I say to Matt, what is that right offer? I mean, the $1 million man in WWE, you say everybody's got a price, right? What is the price to get Matthew, and what would you have to get back?
Right.
It just depends, because like the suitors that I would think that make the most sense for Matthew are the teams that his dad played for. And St. Louis is a team that I could definitely see having interest. But the pieces that St. Louis has to offer...
That's it. I can't think of a package I'd want to put together from St. Louis.
I mean, there's the thing. The guy that I want is Jordan Kyrou, and I don't think they'd move him at this point.
No.
And Robert Thomas is not good enough, and Thomas is the guy who Tkachuk probably want to play with in St. Louis. So, and other than that, it's tough. Scott Perunovich, I like him, but like it's tough. Arizona is the other team, and he doesn't fit their window at all. So I don't know, like, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So beyond that, I don't really know.
And I think the teams that he would fit their window aren't going to have the cap room to bring him in and aren't going to want to give up the big contract for him. I mean, if you're looking for a move at the deadline, you're not trying to inherit $7 million.
No.
So it's a deal that, it depends on what kind of assets you're looking to get back. That totally changes the game. If you're trying to still compete or if you're rebuilding, that's totally different.
That's the time I could see it maybe working. If this team doesn't make it this year and they're going for futures, then I could see there being a lot of deals.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the number of teams that are on the upswing that are going to want to maybe give up futures for Matthew Tkachuk, I think there are going to be teams like that. This year, not so much.
Yeah.
Kevin, you were mentioning Vladar. I think Vladar is interesting too because, I mean, we've got Wolf, and I think Wolf's the guy we want to take our sweet time with. You don't want to rush him up there. But I think, you can't pay Vladar as long as Markstrom's here. So you've got to really figure out, is Vladar a good backup? Is Vladar a starter? Or does Vladar stay as backup and eventually Wolf becomes a starter? Like, I think it's a good problem to have.
Well, and the other thing is Markstrom going to last that contract? That's the other thing as well. At $6 million at 5 years, I don't...
Well, and I think eventually Markstrom becomes the grizzled veteran backup to Vladar or Wolf or whoever's next.
Yeah, I would take my time with Wolf. I think Wolf is about as untouchable as a prospect of this organization as it should be. But Vladar is an interesting case because he's found money for the Flames. I'm not saying that there's a goaltending controversy, but I think it's.
But I think like Shillington, we're seeing him in a good season for the first time, and I don't want to say Vladar is the key until we get a little more look at him.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
and goaltending is also far less projectable. That's the one thing.
It is.
We've seen David Riddick go on 940 months, and when he was first coming up with the Flames, and it's tough. But I mean, I'm not discounting.
I mean, we saw Henry Carlson look good for a month. Like goalies come, goalies go. So, yeah.
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Before we get to our predictions this week, and I'm going to let you guys predict for Matt, and Matt never does well at this, so we'll give him two cracks to win next week from both of you. Before we get there, I'd say probably the most memorable Flame in the last little bit, our fearless leader for a long time, Jerome McGinley, into the Hall of Fame this week. Anybody have any Jerome memories that they want to share, besides that song from 04, We're All in the Dome, Chilling with Jerome?
I think the one, I know that nobody really likes Eric Francis, but I will give him credit for bringing up the fact that fight with Brendan Shanahan that he had with the blood out of his eye. I forgot about that fight. The fact that he became like from a 63 goals and 63 games with the Kamloops Blazers to a guy that I remember Eric Duhajic saying he needed to play meaner, and did it and just changed his game to what he became, just to a guy that you just didn't really want to fight. Yeah, that's, I think, the big memory with Jerome, just how he made the Flames tough. And, he saved the franchise.
And he do what he needed to do, like you said, the fight. I mean, how many guys in that role go out there and drop the gloves as much as Jerome would? He knew what he needed to do to get this team going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike, what about you? Any Jerome memories?
I have a vivid recollection of the day he was traded, and I was not. I was in a hotel room in Anaheim, and I woke up and I turned on ESPN. I mean, I'm probably the only guy in the world who learned about the Jerome McGinley trade through ESPN, and who actually cared about it. And it was, they didn't talk about it, but it was just on the ticker at the bottom of the screen, and I had to reread it like three times.
You know, we have this thing called the internet now, right?
Yeah, well, I was like 13. And yeah, like it was, and I had just woken up. I just turned on the TV, and because I think it was a deal that sort of happened overnight. And, you know, I honestly didn't even know about the Aaron Ward thing with him saying that he was going to go to Boston, and then he ended up going to Pittsburgh. And, because I was on vacation, I was at Disney, and I had sort of checked out of that season, and so that was just the quintessential way to learn about the Flames losing a guy when I was in Anaheim, because the Flames always lose in Anaheim.
Yeah, it's you're right. I mean, that trade, I remember sitting there as well. I was waking up the next morning here in Calgary, and I saw on my phone Jerome McGinley trade, and I was expecting a big return. I just remember feeling like we got gut punched when I saw what the Flames got back.
Yeah, like, hadn't they already? I thought they were going to get like Olli Määttä and like good prospects. Like, who was a good prospect in Pittsburgh at the time? Was Bo Bennett there? I mean, I don't know. But like the guys that they got were sort of Z-list prospects. It was like, I didn't know if they were even Pittsburgh's top 10 at the time.
You know, I'll say that I think the memories I have of Jerome aren't necessarily on the ice, but I've seen him at a lot of community events, and he was always first guy in, last guy out. He would be the guy that would make sure everyone got an autograph, everyone got a picture, everyone got to say hi, even if he had a plane to catch or a bus to catch. Like, Jerome was that consummate captain, and I think that's something that Calgary hasn't had a lot of.
And he respected the game. Like, he respected, you know, when Trevor Linden retired, he made sure the Flames were on the ice to shake his hand. I think the other memory that just popped into my head is the night he returned when he played for Boston. There were more fans cheering for Boston and Iginla than the Flames that night. And it's just, they wanted to see Iginla score a goal so bad on that night. There's not been a franchise impact. Like, with all due respect to Mika, I mean, who's probably second, Iginla was the franchise of this team.
You know what was really cool was this preseason, this past preseason. I was at the Flames' first home game of that preseason against the Seattle Kraken. And that was the game where, you know, Oliver Shillington first took his step. But also at that game, Mark Giordano scored. And the eruption that came from the crowd when I heard that, that reminded me of that game that you just talked about, that Boston game. And it was, yeah, it's just Calgary loves its captains. And I can see why they're maybe waiting a little bit longer to get this next one right, because it's sort of hard to follow in the footsteps of those two.
Well, and I think the guy who a lot of people think is heir apparent to the C is a pending UFA. So I think if you lock him up, and I think a lot of people think that Matthew Tkachuk's the heir apparent, you want to lock him up before you put a C on him.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I would, honestly, you know what I would do is if Johnny extends, I would put an A on him.
Yep. So, guys, December 19th, 1995, Calgary Flames trade Joe Nieuwendyk to the Dallas Stars for Jerome McGinley and Corey Millen. Now that everyone's retired, who wins that trade?
Whew. Hard to argue with the team that won the Cup, but, I mean, at the same time, you know, you can't.
I think if we look at those guys, Jerome did more for the Flames than I think Nieuwendyk did for the Stars.
It's not even a question. I mean, yeah, like, it's, you got a guy who comes to a team and is the best player in franchise history. I mean, you can't. That's.
And I would say not just in franchise history. I would say for a few years when he played, the best player of his in the league.
Probably. Yeah, there were probably a couple of years there. Yeah, definitely. I would say not a top 100 player of all time though. So it's.
Yeah.
What do you think, Kev?
Yeah, I think it's hard not to say that Calgary did not win the trade. I mean, Uyandyk left Dallas shortly after they won that cup. And Corey Millen, while not a legend of Flames lore, was actually a pretty good player that year for the Flames, even though they were a terrible team at the time. Corey Millen was not a terrible player. So I would say that the Flames did win that trade.
Corey Millen never really played pro after that. He went, got traded in 96, and then he went on to play for the Cologne Sharks of the Dell League after that. So, yeah, kind of the end of his NHL career.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we'll do a fireside chat tradition, and Mike's done this a few times. I think, Kevin, we've had you do it, but we usually do the predictions for the next week. Historically, Matt loses this game because he's either over-optimistic or under-optimistic. So I told Matt we're going to give him two chances to win this week. We'll let you guys both pick, and if it's good with you, if either of you win, we'll give that point to Matt next week.
Sounds good.
Fine.
Either that or I will mail you some sort of inflatable Stanley Cup that you can put in your room.
All right.
So we got four games in the docket for the Flames this week. If we take a look at the week coming up, they're finishing their Eastern road swing. I guess we could say their sort of New York area road swing. Tomorrow they play Buffalo, 5 p.m. Mountain Time. Saturday night is the New York Islanders at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. Then they've got the Boston Bruins Sunday, and they're home to Chicago Blackhawks on Tuesday. So, Kevin, why don't we start with you? What are you thinking for this one?
I think they go 2-2. I think they win in Buffalo. I think they lose on the island, and I think they lose in Boston, and they win in Chicago.
What do you think, Mike?
All right, I think they lose 4-2 in Buffalo. I think it's going to be a trap game for them, but I think they're going to rebound in a big way on the island. I believe that's the first game in the Islanders' new arena.
Yeah, that's why I think the Islanders win that one. But
no, I think they're going to spoil it. I think it's going to be a 5-1 win for the Flames in that one.
Wow.
And then in Boston, that's an interesting one to me because the Flames have actually been, I think, pretty good against Boston recently.
And not bad back-to-back this year.
So what I'm going to say is I think they're going to get only their second overtime win of the season. I think they're going to win that one 4-3. And then I think they're going to shut out the Blackhawks 1-0.
So you think they're going to win New York, Boston, and Chicago?
Yeah.
So that'd be a much better week for them this week.
Yeah.
I think that they're going to lose to Buffalo. I think we've seen, if we look at the games against Montreal where they underestimated them, I would even see that first period of Chicago of the the Ottawa game. I think that they might come out a little bit slow, and Buffalo might be able to. Buffalo's also been looking good lately, and I think the Buffalo could do something there. I think they're also going to lose the Boston game. I think Boston might overpower them. But I'm going to say, like Mike, I think they'll spoil the New York Islanders game, and I think that Chicago's turning into a dumpster fire, so I think that they can win there. So I'll say lose Buffalo-Boston, win New York-Chicago.
It would suck if they lost to Chicago.
No, totally, yes. Yeah. Cannot lose to Chicago.
So that's nope. Yeah.
I think that's what everybody's saying this year.
Yeah, I think they're going to get goalied a little bit in that game. That's why I think it's going to be 1-0, but I don't think Chicago's going to score.
I just hope it's land of boos. I hope every time someone touches a puck in Chicago, it's a boo.
I'm going to be at that game. Yeah.
Okay. Make sure that it's not boo earns. It's boo.
Yeah, when 19 and 88 touch the puck, it's going to be boos. Yeah. For sure.
Well, Kevin, Mike, thanks for joining us this week. Thanks for filling in for Matt. We appreciate you guys stepping in last minute and helping out, and I thought this was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Always a pleasure.
And I'm going to do Matt's usual sign-off since he's not here. As always, go Flames, go. This episode was hosted by Dan Stevenson and co-hosted by Mike Gold and Kevin Olenek. The episode was produced by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat episodes are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike license. The full license terms are available at firesidechat.ca.